starting another day of the Backpack Show with Dan Gorgona. Oh, hi, Carrie. You're back.
What, are you like the lesser Gorgon or something? you were just like, oh, we don't have so many just like straight white guys on the show, and now you want Dan back?
I want Dan.
I'll go get him if that's Dan you
was
want.
Dan was a great co-host.
But I'll go back to bed.
Let's agree that Dan is not suited for this time of day. It's not as normal.
He's more a night owl. O'clock. That's true.
Wow, we have another episode of the Backpack Show to produce. Who'd have thunk it?
I would have.
Oh, you indeed would have. What are we doing today? Who's
well,
our show?
Well, this is the Backpack Show where we bring you insights about success from unusual places. I found Ian Forrest, who is one of three hosts of the Behind the Screams horror podcast based out of Scotland. So they talk about horror movies and like dissect them in great detail. And it's really a fun show. So I wanted to have him on to talk about how you make a successful podcast when there's like a gazillion D out there. And we also have Christopher B., by comma Christopher, who is a songwriter and pianist whose work helps to raise awareness about mental illness and depression and things like that, and also is really good music therapy music.
So Stephen B. and Diane B. are also in from Vegas saying hello. And Chloe, you should know that Ian is up by Aberdeen, so practically in your hood.
Yeah, Chloe, whatever like call you put out to Scottish people to be like, hey, one of ours is on the show. Today is the day. One. Yeah.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgon, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Put out the Scottish bat signal.
I haven't been able to cut you off for days. How good did that feel? Mm.
So good. That was cool. Thank you. Mm. Thank you for that.
I don't know what to do first.
If only there was a way I could cut you off, it would be really nice.
Oh, for gosh sake, stop talking. Let the woman speak.
Something like that could happen.
Thanks, Tim Kitzrow.
So, hey, it's Stanley Tucci from Milan now.
Hello. Ciao.
Now, Naz was on our live show the other day that joined me in the studio show. So that was good.
That's the best way to be. I wonder if he'll show up tomorrow when we're celebrating sausage.
Tomorrow is, in fact, Johnsonville Sausage Appreciation Day. You can't get in on this anymore. This is it. This is the last.
I have coupons. I have many coupons.
For Canada only or for everywhere?
For everywhere.
All right. Well, you can earn them tomorrow if you show up to the show. But Johnsonville, sponsor of the show, this will probably be their last sponsor role. This is it. Last read. So we're going to talk horror and sausage and mental health.
It's horror and day. Sausage. Yeah. Those two things together give me the horrors, actually.
Scarysausage.com. Somebody missed you.
Biological parents missed me.
There's PubSite. If you're an author, you can have your own really cool website really fast with PubSite. Pub-site.com put together an author website lickety fast.
That's not how that goes.
I don't know.
Lickety split. It is super easy to use, and it's got like pre-built into it all the things you need as an author, so it's really cool. So check it out. Pub-site.com.
So small. Oh, so short maybe.
What? Are you calling one of our guests short? That is so not okay. You sizist jerk. Wait, where's that yellow card?
You're calling Carol a sizist jerk?
No, you.
That's what she just said, look.
Oh, he's talking about you? One of our guests today is named Chris, and I thought Chris was talking about Chris, and I was like,
who's,
what?
Who's
backstage? That's not okay.
So how are we going to know? Oh,
well, we see them backstage. We do see the people who are backstage. We didn't tell them that, did we? We do.
So. Good thing they're still wearing their clothes and haven't picked their nose.
So far.
Hey, I got to do a couple more reads.
No, you don't. You can do them later.
StreamYard.
Oh, you.
This show, if you have a weird co-host who hasn't been on a bunch of days and wants to roll around in the show, cbrogan.me/StreamYard.
You're right. I'm so off today. Gee, it's not like you've been doing it every day.
We have a .online domain. Do you want a .online domain? Ian Forrest could have a .online domain. It could be behindthescreams.online. Why wouldn't you? 99 cents for the whole first year. cbrogan.me/online. Get you some. Hey, if you think that I'm not attractive enough for video, you can listen to us because of the people at castos.com. We have an audio podcast. We're going to compete with Behind the Screams. We're going to tell you where the berries are bodied. That's what we're going to do. Today's show, we're going to talk about another dead guy in a movie we saw with dead guys in it. That's what we're going to do. Is that everything?
It's so much more fun than that. You make it sound weird.
Well, we're going to find out. Let's ask the guy. Okay. Hi, Elizabeth. Let's ask a guy. Why do you do a show about all kinds of dead people, Ian? Why can't you be normal?
I'm just a massive weirdo. I'm sorry.
I feel like Radiohead made a song about you.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe just a little one, just slightly about me, probably. Definitely.
So in case people couldn't tell, Behind the Screams is based out of Scotland. I was going to say Brooklyn, but it's definitely Scotland.
Yeah, you don't exactly have a Brooklyn accent.
So what was the movie that got you hooked on horror, Ian?
So, funny story, because obviously horror movies seen as a very like adult thing. Saw my first horror movie when I was 6 years old. My parents, who are lovely parents, I don't want anyone to think I have terrible parents, I have lovely parents, they showed me the movie Scream when I was 6 years old. And it traumatized me for some time. They thought it was going to be a comedy movie. And boy, how wrong they were. So yeah, 6 years old. And then just from there, I think I stayed away from horror for a little bit after that. I think it was just a little bit too young. And then after that, just over the years, going up through my sort of teenage years, started watching more and more and more. And now I don't think I watch anything else, to be honest.
Really?
I don't have time to.
Oh, wait, that makes sense. You got to stick to what you like.
Definitely.
Well, so one thing that's changed a lot, and I do watch a few different video people who do reviews and whatnot, and they've all had the challenge of, you know, they get all the screening copies because that's easy enough to do with digital, but they miss the experience. They miss seeing what the audience thought of a movie as well and sort of bringing that into it. Horror is definitely a lot of fun in a theater. Because you get a lot of people, you know, getting that tension up as we're walking backwards towards that closet. Has that changed the experience over the last few years being locked down?
Definitely. I mean, I think cinema experience in the UK and a cinema experience in the US, I think, are two very different things. We're quite reserved over here. So there's not generally a lot of people who's making like a lot of noise. It's very frowned upon. There's a lot of shooters over here, you know, but, you know, you still get that sort of audible gasp, you know, when something truly terrifying happens or something just unbelievable happens, and it's really quite satisfying. You know, you get this sort of weird sense of satisfaction when you hear everyone else, you know, gasping, or, you know, you get a few people who scream and things like that. And obviously you don't get that at the home experience. And, you know, having watched horror now and been sort of a fan of horror for over 20 years, I've become a little desensitized to it, so I don't get that sort of same sense myself. But I do miss the appreciation of other people at the same time.
And you have a couple like-minded friends that do the show with you.
I do, because obviously when we started the show, I started it completely by myself, and then I realized, you know what, maybe I'm just not that interesting to talk to on my own for 30 minutes. Doing a solo show is not the easiest thing in the world. You know, you have to be of a certain way to be able to do
Chris
a solo.
Chris does it all the time, Ian. Like,
and he is very entertaining.
So true.
but no, so like I was wanting to try and get other people involved, and I started sort of reaching out to some of other shows that I'd sort of been speaking to, and my two now co-hosts are longtime friends of mine. I've known them both for over a decade, and I'd had them on sort of periodically, the odd episode here or there, be like, come on the show, we'll see how it goes, you know. And it went really well, and we at the start of this year decided that they would become permanent parts of the show, and now it's a three-person show, and it takes so much pressure off of me. I love it. It's great. It's great to speak to it with friends as well.
There's a lot of, I feel like there's so many 70s horror movies that really set the bar. Like the number one consistent opinion of number one and two scariest movies of all times, switching back and forth on different lists, are Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Exorcist. And I was thinking about The Omen. And so I was going to play just a tiny little bite of your Omen episode. Now, I did not cue this up. I literally dragged the thing to 9 minutes. Like, you know, we'll see what happens. Hang on, I'm just going to push play.
Religious themed horror movie. I wanted to ask you guys, because I'm not actually 100% certain, like, are you guys religious?
I believe in stuff, higher power, whatever, but I'm not like super religious. But as a child, I feel like that's why it scared me the most. Mm-hmm. My family was religious. I used to have to go to church every Sunday. Okay. I had all types of children Bibles and stuff. Like, no, I was at church, love. Like, so this was scary. Something coming from hell is scary. The devil was scary to me. So yeah, but it's not as scary now, but as a child, this movie mm-hmm. fucked me up.
There we go. That's the part you pick.
And that's when you interviewed Girl That's Scary.
Yeah, we have the little explicit check mark next to our name, so for anyone who's out there, there's lots of swear words.
A lot of potty mouth out there.
There's a lot. I'm Scottish. I can't. I'm sorry.
Nobody else in my family watched horror movies. So I was like, I was the only one. I'm down at Outback Video Store with the VHS in the section pulling like Sleepaway Camp and like, you know, really to stuff my parents, like Deadly Friend and Terrible, the horror movies. My parents were like, what is wrong with you? Like literally, what is wrong with you? Chloe wants to know, I love horror. Oh, she says, I love horror films. And she wants to know, what's the scariest horror film you've ever seen?
Oh, well, it's a hard question for me because, like I say, I became so desensitized to it, which you do. If you watch them for decades and a long, long time, you become a little bit desensitized to it. But one of the things that I've been sort of speaking to people about is like a subgenre of horror movies is home invasion horror movies, you know, so people breaking into your home and things like that. And so I always quote The Strangers as one of the scariest horror movies for me, because, you know, that's just completely random. Three people, it could happen. And those for me are the ones that are the scariest, rather than, you know, the supernatural kind of horror movies.
There's one, I don't know if you've seen it, about a deaf woman who's alone in her home and somebody's breaking into her house. Yeah. And she doesn't know they're there. And it just like adds another element.
Definitely. It's a great movie, but like that's plays on the same thing. Like I'm talking about with Strangers as well. You know, there's scenes where they don't know they're there. They don't know they're already in the house. You see them in the background, but the characters don't. And, you know, it's a bit of a terrifying thought.
There's so many questions I have, but one is almost obvious, but not. What makes someone, well, this is, so we have this question in so many other genres, right? Why would you watch someone else play video games? Why wouldn't you just play the video games? Why would we want to listen to three people talk about a horror movie? Like, what are we going to get out of it that we wouldn't have got with Behind the Screams?
You know what, like, because you were talking about with podcasts, obviously, there's so many podcasts out there these days. And there are a lot of horror podcasts. There's not too many horror podcasts from Scotland, so you know, you'll get our lovely Scottish voices, which you don't really get to hear. But I think as well, for some people, it's just a case of, you know, watching a horror movie. Horror movies really deal with a huge amount of themes and issues, and you know, they make political statements and they make current affairs statements and all those sorts of things. And sometimes it's really good to just sort of break that down, hear someone break that down, because maybe you don't always realize it straight away. You don't realize it on a first or a second watch, and it takes someone else to, you know, sort of say, oh, this is what I took from it. Because with horror movies as well, some in particular, some not so much, some are, you know, very, very one-dimensional, but for some of them, they're so three-dimensional that there's so many things that you might not pick up on it that someone else might. And we have a lot of shenanigans as well. You know, we have our fun as well. And, you know, we talk about, you know, behind the scenes stuff, which is, of course, where I got the name from. You know, we go in and we deal with some trivia that we've sort of researched and talk about that. And we give other people's opinions and things. So we try and sort of encapsulate everything in sort of one episode.
It's like bonus features.
Yeah, definitely.
So does any particular factoid stick out after all these many episodes? Do you have that sort of memory of, I cannot believe that they used this instead of blood or something like that?
I mean, there's a couple for like some of the more famous ones that sort of stick out in my mind. I have them all written down in like various files everywhere, so I can pull them all up. But so things like Alien. For example, we covered the movie Alien, chest bursting scene, probably one of the most famous scenes in horror history. The crew, completely unaware of what was going to happen. They didn't know. That was a shock to them. All their reactions, completely real. And there's a load of stuff you hear about like that happening as well. We're talking about we were talking about the Exorcist as well. And, you know, at one point they're wanting someone to act really shocked in a particular scene. William Friedkin, the director, actually shot a gun right next to the actor's ear without him knowing, so that he would give this really shocked reaction. So yeah, there's so much trivia to talk about.
So you're bringing a lot to it then. You're not just like, the movie was awesome.
Yeah, like that's that, like, look, we give our personal opinions on these movies. We'll say, you know, I really like this movie, I didn't like this movie, whatever. Like, we'll do that too, but we will then go into specifics. We'll break it down. We don't break it down, you know, every little minute detail, because then that becomes incredibly boring. No one wants to hear us do that. But you know, we break down some of the scenes, we talk about some of the things, we make some jokes, we have some laughs. So yeah, we definitely break things down. It's not just a case of, oh, I like this.
It's amazing how horror movies can have the opportunity to tap real primal fears. We were talking yesterday, my ex-wife and my oldest kid and I were doing a really quick errand, and we went by this little pond where there were kids out skating on it. And I don't skate on ponds because of Damien 2. The scene in Damien 2 where the kid goes under the ice, and that's like intensely vividly in my head. So I wouldn't do it. I mean, I would even look at a rink a few times before I skated a rink.
But it's true though, because how many people have you heard over the years say, oh, I couldn't go in the water after Jaws, you know, or something like that. Horror movies do have this ability to tap in to what is one of our most basic emotions, and that is fear.
This is interesting. So Carol says that she's a horror movie wuss, but loves true crime. So you won't watch like a fake story about murder, but you'll watch a murder show.
One that can actually happen.
About real murder. Huh? I don't know. I'll stick with fiction.
Can't stand it.
So I have a few.
Okay, so not horror, but
check toilets because of Lethal Weapon 2. Yeah,
where Danny Glover sits down and the toilet's wired to explode if he gets up, and he's got to sit there on the toilet while they try to figure out what to do.
Now, what's your take on the intentionally comedy style horror, like upcoming movie Willy's Wonderland with Nicolas Cage?
So I've not seen Willy's Wonderland yet. It is on our list. I've been getting loads of people to sort of say to me, oh, you need to watch this, you need to watch this. But, you know, I'm a big fan of any type of horror movie, whether that's horror comedies, you know. Some of my favorites are horror comedies, because I really like the fact that it's the juxtaposition of it. You know, these such horrific things are happening to our group of characters, and yet you're laughing all the way through. One of my favorites is Shaun of the Dead.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
You know, is we're very proud of here in the UK. You know, that's like our thing, you know. And then there's absolutely tons more as well. But even some of your more serious horror movies can still have like small comedic elements. You'll still find, because that's life, isn't it? Funny things happen, you know, no matter what may be happening to you, no matter how horrific, maybe not as horrific as, you know, being chased by serial killers or whatever, but even if you're having a hard time, there's still laughter to be had in your life. There's still happy moments. So that's, I really like that. That's a subgenre.
The only kind of horror that I can't get into is the kind that the story is so hard to parse, like Serpent and the Rainbow or Suspiria, where you're like, huh? Like, what even just happened? I need a story, even if it's terrible and makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean,
you gotta be able to follow it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, like plots and that are incredibly important. There are a lot of movies out there that just sort of set out to shock people. And there is a whole subgenre of those types of movies as well. You know, there's that whole sort of gorehound splatter style movies that are just, you know, completely out there to shock people, push the limits, push the boundaries. And they have their place too. Not my favorite, but they have their place.
I'm sorry, I have to ask. True crime has the whole investigation and court case elements to it, which I love, and less gore. So you basically want to watch a civil procedure show, Carol, is you going to watch. So we can hook you up.
Dun, dun.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Paul says, I lived in fear of attic doors after being shown Black Christmas as a 12-year-old in school. Ooh, yikes.
Paul's over in Ireland, by the way.
Oh.
Oh, if you could only pick one for your all-time favorite. That's a tough question.
So for me, it's one of the running themes now on the podcast that I talk about Halloween all the time. It's like one of the things that I'll constantly reference. So it's Halloween. You know, I'm a big fan of the big lover of John Carpenter's work. You know, so Halloween is definitely for me number one. It'll always be number one.
Well, so then I have to ask what you thought of the newest one, because I thought it was a pretty darn good addition to the pile.
Well, I absolutely loved it. It's my second favorite Halloween movie of all time. So I thought it was awesome. I was never, like, getting into it a little bit, I was never a massive fan of the whole sort of brother-sister storyline that they had going on in some of the sequels. So I was really happy that they retconned that. Obviously, really happy to see Jamie Lee Curtis back, who is amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, that movie. I really love that movie.
So what did they leave? Is it 1-5 in this one? Is that basically all that they left as the
curve? No, they just the one. Just one. Oh. Oh. They retconned everything that came after the first one. So all those, what is there, 12 movies now? The Rob Zombie movies, they're gone. All those sequels are gone. It's one and then the 2018.
Carol knows I'm teasing. People from Boston don't tease people if they don't like them. That's just so right. You know.
Elizabeth
don't said talk to you at all.
Elizabeth said that the ring totally freaked her out, and I was just thinking Elizabeth has this long black hair, she'd be perfect, you know, for the ring. Anybody long black hair with a, you know, a bad VCR or something, I think that's watch out.
Oh, I love the send-ups, the scary movie type things where they have little pieces like, oh my god, what happened to her, get her a towel. It's like the girl from the ring. So much fodder for humor in horror movies. Like, you take it seriously while you're watching it, but then later you realize how funny it is.
That's interesting. Absolutely. Paul's daughter loves horror movies, but not the alien movies. She's terrified of the alien movies. Well, it's because in space, no one can hear you scream.
Hey.
Ian Forrest, I have to stick you backstage. We have things to do here. But stick around if you can. This was super
fun.
Don't
go anywhere. He'll be right back.
Don't look in that armoire behind you. Oh my
god. Don't like say Bloody Mary three times into the mirror.
There can't be a more 90 degree turn. Because Carrie books this show. And she said, you know what would be great? Horror and a very soft, gentle piano player.
I really did. Because you need that. Sometimes it gets you all amped up and you really need to relax afterwards.
You know, I feel like, you know, I feel like almost like we could have a small palate cleanser, don't you? I
mean, sure.
Let's just do a little bit. Oh, I have the sound off. Let's see how not in trouble we get for doing this one.
Oh. I like to get in trouble.
Oh, my buttons. Hang on. Shh.
I think you were out of practice.
So, Christopher, this is your fault. What the heck are we doing here? So, you make these beautiful soundscapes. You have all kinds of relaxing music, sleep-inducing sometimes, very good at making us feel good. What got us here? How do we say this is what we have to do with our time in our life?
Well, I mean, you know, we have a lot of problems in this country right now with COVID, and geez, I mean, like a year ago I was in the process of writing this stuff and writing all this music, and I kind of had to stop and go, you know, people are needing something more than just, you know, something nice to listen to. We need something with intention. We need to really start focusing, because I mean, you can see behind me, I got my home gym right behind me. I had to bring it home. I had to bring everything in to get my mindfulness practice going and kind of just get back to me again. And gosh, we're needing that, aren't we? You know, we're needing that calm, relaxation, and And kind of a little bit about music therapy. I mean, that's what music therapy is, right? It's doing something with intention behind it. And I always tell people, I say, everybody does music therapy every day. You just don't realize it. You turn on the songs in the morning, you get your day going, you feel good. But I think a lot of what I bring to the music therapy scene, if that's what you want to call it, is allowing a person that has maybe some unresolved trauma or maybe some unresolved issues from their past, and allow that to begin a healing process. Because I think music can reach within each and every one of us deeper than even talking to someone can do. So I think that's a very much needed thing right now, especially with where we are in the world today.
Where do you find inspiration for particular pieces? Like, do you think I'm feeling this specific way? Like, if you're experiencing grief or anxiety, do you write something kind of specific for that?
Well, if you saw in the first clip that you played, you saw the photography that was there. Well, even the one that's popping up right now. That's all photography I took. That's where I go to get a lot of my inspiration, which is nature, which is obviously another great way to be able to bring calm and relaxation, which is what my brand is all about, to yourself. You know, this was taken not too long ago, but it's just a very quiet place near where I live. And I like to go out there and just be able to allow the music to speak to me and then bring it back into my studio where I record it and then obviously put it on the YouTube platform for people to listen to.
Who were you before you were soft, calm music to fall asleep by guy? Like, were you in a metal band or like, who's like earlier Christopher B before you settled into building this?
Man. So before, well, okay. So full disclosure here, there's a 20 year gap between when I did my first album and now this is my second album. So I do about one every 20 years. So there you go. Next one coming out in 2040.
Reggae?
We'll see where we're at. I don't know. It's a developing style. But before, I mean, back in the day, I first got started off, I was playing for seniors at nursing homes, retirement centers. I mean, I love going in there and bringing that joy into people's lives. And that was my way of bringing music to other people before it was even my own, before I had really developed my own style. I was playing the classics. I was playing Bing Crosby and watching couples dance on the dance floor for the senior homes. And boy, that was a fun start for me. I really enjoyed that. And you know, it's kind of a little bit of a tie into what I'm doing right now. I mean, I wanted to do that today, but you can't go into senior homes. You can't go into those places. And you know, maybe soon we can, but part of the inspiration and motivation for putting it out for people is to be able to bring that into people's homes so they can find that calm and relaxation that is so needed today.
Chloe says, I love the way music connects with emotions that can't always be explained with words. Elizabeth agrees.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so true.
There's so much on your channel, but there's also moments where you're having conversations. So talking about music for mental health or mental health awareness, and you did a big live stream and all that. This is a chance for people to come and connect and figure out their relationship with music, but also what it might be able to do for them. How did you come to that realization? How did you decide that this is the way that I'm going to handle some of what I'm dealing with?
So, you know, my mom, growing up, my mom had depression, and I saw that as a child, didn't understand what that was. So, you know, what did I know? Well, she was the one that introduced me to music, and music was the thing that brought her around me in my early childhood because she loved what I did. And she loved what I wrote early on. So I made that connection really quick that me playing brought my mom back into my life when she was going through some dark times. And sadly, in 2012, I lost her to brain cancer. And that was one of the darkest times in my life. You know, going through that disconnect of how much I connected music to her and then that going away. So there was about a 5-year gap between me even touching the piano and writing a song. And 2017 comes around and I thought I want to open the box a little bit and look inside and see what music might do for me. And so I first started writing again for me, and that's how I approached it. Was I'm doing this for me first and foremost, because I have to allow a healing process to begin for myself and the trauma and the hurt that I went through of losing my mom before I can even begin to give that to other people and allow that to be effective to other people. And so 2017 was when I started the concept of the By Christopher Brand, and I wrote 3 songs dedicated to mental health awareness, and it was very well received. And it was, to me, it was a sign that I should continue on and press forward. And obviously we are where we are today, and being able to really tie the brand into mental health awareness is a cause near and dear to me because of family members that I grew up with that has depression, and that's something that runs in my family. So it really is. And it's a conversation I think that we're able to have today as a society a little bit more. It's not so taboo to talk about your own feelings now. I mean, before it was, you want to have a conversation around mental health awareness, it was talking about someone you knew or some distant cousin that you know has a problem. Well, I think we're kind of starting to realize, hey, we all have stress, we all have anxiety, and we all know the reasons why, because we're all in something together, we're sharing something. So we can all kind of bring that conversation to a front.
I have a weird question about composition. So I listen to a lot of this type of music, this sort of music to fall asleep by and all that sort of a thing. And I was thinking about the fact that this is going to sound critical, and I just want to hear your take on it. Music to fall asleep by, and all of your tracks are like 2 minutes long. Now, I'm really good at falling asleep fast, but isn't the genre in general like 10-hour ambient loops of binaural beats or something?
You say that like it should be on your LinkedIn, Chris. You're like, I fall asleep really fast, so that's one
that's
of my skills.
I'm really good at falling asleep. Wicked good at it, Christopher.
Hey, but no, maybe I'm that good at writing songs. I'll put you to sleep in 30 seconds. No,
damn,
that's a great point.
You see what I mean? Like usually they're long, yours are not.
I do. So what you started playing just minutes ago was part of my 7 weeks of focus soundtracks. Those are 20 minutes in length, and I'll have 7 total by in 4 weeks. I'm on week 4 right now. So you'll have 140 minutes of music. If that's something you want to fall asleep to, I mean, you can. This is more music for mindfulness meditations, yoga, anyone that wants to really kind of have some sort of a practice that they do in the morning. But, you know, you're right. I look at my music, especially the songs part, you know, a reflection of time, as kind of something you would listen to before you go to bed. You're not going to put it, you know, put it on your head and fall asleep to. Maybe you can, but most people tell me, hey, I listen to this 10, 15 minutes before bedtime and I sleep like a baby. So, you know, that's good for them.
Now we're just listening.
You have a baby. Does your baby sleep to this music?
Well, she's 1 year old now, and we played. I was writing this album when my partner and I were pregnant with her, and I played these songs for her in the first few weeks when she was born, every single day, and she slept to these songs like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it was crazy. Like she almost knew them. She did know them, and she still can fall asleep to my songs. So. But now she tries to play herself. So I sit her down at the in the music room here, and I sit down, and she tries to bang out her own tunes and make something up like I do. So,
aw, my kids will only sleep to death metal. I guess I know why now. Carol says probably the best recipe for making art is doing it for yourself instead of trying to make something to please the masses.
Well, that's a good question. I guess when Carol says something like that, do you feel? It's weird to think about, but do you feel outward pressure? I just said to you, how come these things aren't 10 hours long like everybody else? Do you feel any kind of weird pressure, or is there any kind of weird competition by people showing raindrop videos and stuff like that?
Nope, not at all. I feel no pressure because I have to write for myself first, because if I don't, what people hear is not authentic, and I have to be authentic for me. And there are people that, yeah, that, you know, pay them $100, pay them $1,000, they'll write you whatever you want. Heck, maybe I would too. But, you know, but that's not my style. You know, my style is doing it for me first and foremost, and people enjoy that. That's what people tell me they enjoy.
Are minor chords banned from your keyboard?
Minor chords? Actually, no. The first song you played, that's actually major, but most of the songs in the album, the very next one called Mirrors, is a minor tone chord, G minor, and I play a lot of my songs in minor tones. You know, a lot of that album it comes from a very healing place for me, and so a lot of that healing was pain, and so I reflect a lot of the pain in the minor minor sound, a little darker sound. But I tell people that, you know, my sound is dark, but there's a lot of hope from within. You know, there's a lot of hope from within, and you know, it's therapeutic to me. So if you know, that's what I like about it.
So is this a business for you now, or is it still something you just do for yourself? Or is it both?
Well, I have been doing, I put a Reflection of Time album up on January 1 of this year, and it is turning into a lot of different things, and I'm right now trying to figure out what that is. But what I'm finding out is that people are using it, like, for instance, the Invictus Foundation, which is a foundation that helps people with PTSD, people that can't afford, veterans that can't afford mental health. They just endorsed my channel, and they're using it as a resource on their website now. And so it's interesting to see how people are going, wow, okay, I could use it this way, or I've had people approach me for wanting to use my music under their guided meditations. So it's just kind of figuring out, well, what am I comfortable allowing people to use it for? And as long as it falls in line with the creative vision that I've had, you know, it's been doing a lot of good things. And, you know, right now, people have asked me, well, you should go off the YouTube platform. You should go over to Spotify. You should go over to here. Right now, it's like I want to kind of find out who my fan base is and who enjoys it, and do that, and then see what it can become.
See where it can go next. Well, here is where you get to mix your major and your minor chords, because we're bringing back Ian Forrest. Watch for it.
Oh, man. Oh.
He has to put you back on your side of the baddies. Like, no, this is the best.
This is the best dynamic ever. I mean, you talk about going from the horror genre to calm, relaxing music. I mean, you're going to have your listeners all over the place here in a few seconds.
Well, but think about that, how the music of a scene changes the entire thing. That's what makes you feel suspense or know something bad's going to happen, or that this is just like a nice moment, like an interval between slashings. That's how you know.
You're so right. You know, we talk about scores and soundtracks to movies all the time. You know, I mentioned Halloween earlier. One of the reasons I love that movie so much is because it's got such an amazing score. You know, we just recorded a new episode on Carrie, and we talked so in depth about the score. Music is such a powerful thing. But I'll terrify everyone, and Christopher can calm them down.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's what you want. You really want to manipulate people. You want to beat them up and then pull back a little bit and give them a hug.
We'll teach you to make DIY Stockholm syndrome right here on the show.
Do you have a favorite score? See,
everyone can go watch. Oh man, favorite score. I'm a huge fan of John Williams. So John Williams is my hero. I was actually just listening to Best of John Williams yesterday. It was his 1969 to 1999 Best of, and I'm thinking, you know, that's 30 years. There's another 20 years that have gone by since that came out, and you could do another big album. But, you know, obviously the Star Wars stuff is good, but I like E.T. E.T. has, it's the best. It's the best for movie scores, in my opinion. So
I suspect Ian has a different answer to this question.
John Carpenter, like I was saying earlier, is such a, you know, he's so multi-talented. You know, he wasn't just a director, he was a producer, but he was a great musician as well.
I mean, not like if you're trying to get work done, Ian.
I know. Does John Carpenter listen to this show?
Maybe no. James Horner, for like if you're trying to like, you know, Legend of the Fall or like Titanic or something. If you're just trying to like grade papers, John Carpenter for that. You know, you gotta think.
But no, you know, I really like listening to sort of big dramatic scores in horror, you know, big orchestral pieces, you know, things like in the Omen as well. You know, we were talking about that earlier. These big orchestral, they're so dramatic. That's what I really love about a score from horror movies. You know, those sort of big music pieces.
I'm thinking about all those great 80s scores from Tangerine Dream. And how I hope no one ever has to hear them ever again in our lifetime. It was like, just the worst. But I think it is interesting when we come to realize the power music has on us. I mean, everyone maybe isn't a soft or, you know, soft melodic piano music person, but everyone has music they turn to when they have a thing that they want to feel. It's interesting that maybe part of what we want in a horror movie is the same thing. We go to certain horror movies when there's a thing we want to feel.
Yeah, I definitely think so, you know, because, you know, so many different horror movies deal with such a wide variety of themes and emotions, from, you know, mental health issues to, you know, anything really. There is a horror movie for it. You know, we're starting to get a lot of horror movies, you know, around sort of LGBT sort of people as well, and you know, they deal with so many different things, and you definitely turn to specific horror movies for specific emotions. I have my comfort horror movies, you know, Sunday afternoon, it's raining outside, I just want to be chill, you know, with a beer, and I'll just watch my Sunday afternoon horror movies. And to some people that might be completely just a bizarre thought, you know, they think, how is that relaxing in any way, shape or form? But to me, that's what I find relaxing.
It can be a real like stress reliever, like a stress outlet. There's times I'm in the mood for something funny, like Hot Fuzz, you know, where the accidents are so implausible and so grisly, but it's also very funny. And then there's other times I just want a straight ahead, ridiculous, like unintentionally funny campy movie, you know, like it's very funny. But at the time they're like, no, this is a serious cinematic film masterpiece. So it's all what you're in the mood for, but it can be a great stress reliever. What's your go-to movie when you're looking for something, Christopher, to relieve stress?
Oh, relieve stress. Oh man. I just like a good old comedy, you know. I like, you know, American Pie, going back to 2000. That was my time. So I watched some American Pie. I just want to just like let go, but you know, I was saying before, House of a Thousand Corpses for me, for a good old horror movie. And on that note too, you know, Rob Zombie does some awesome music. So, you know, that's kind of opposite spectrum from what I do. But boy, you know, music really is, it's really about, you know, what is it doing for you? And people are always like, well, what if I don't like your music? And I was like, well, then turn it off, you know, go to something you like, because that's what you should, you know, that's why we listen to and watch things that, you know, that make us feel good about our day, our lives, and actually transport us to other times in our lives as well.
Jimmy wants to know, are we using StreamYard? Yes, we are, Jimmy.
Boy, sure are. StreamYard. Get it, Jimmy. Make a show. He's asking because there's StreamYard paid for a lot of YouTube ads. So if you're a free YouTube user, you've seen a lot of My Little Santa Claus Head. So anyway, hey, listen, we got to get to the end of this show. This show is almost over. We've got to do some things. So I think first we have to do this.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do it to very shortly upcoming guest, Slim Jim Longfoot,
yay,
who's another YouTuber and who's coming on the show this week. He's a guest. So we have a weird show where guests just hang out in the audience too. Because
it's not weird. I love that. We ask people we like, so we love seeing them.
Right. We invite the people we like. And by the way, Slim Jim came here by way of that StreamYard ad as well. He's like, man, I just keep seeing your head. Like, well, here's the whole show.
We do that.
Here's the whole show. So we do have one question we ask every single guest who's ever been on the show. This is everyone from Sir Mix-a-Lot to Sister Anne Flanagan. We ask the question, what goes in your backpack? And this question is basically, it could be something metaphorical. It could be something physical. Physical like an avocado. Carrie, what's another good physical thing to put in backpack?
Extra set of teeth.
An extra set of teeth. And
DJ Cumberbund said that, and it stuck in my head ever since.
Best one ever.
Yeah. But it's supposed to be what you need in your backpack for success. We should be clear about that. It's not just like whatever.
Over the next 5 years.
Yeah. Not if you're going to commit murder. It's like for success.
It could be something metaphorical like kindness, or metaphysical like a fifth dimension. So I guess let's start with Ian Forrest. Ian, what goes in the backpack?
I think for me, the absolute key thing that keeps me sane is my diary, you know, because in general, I am the most unorganized person in the world. I have just completely scattered. When I first started the show, you know, I didn't write anything down. I had everything all over the place. You know, I had recordings here and sound recordings here and notes there and guests just, oh, hey, you said you were going to be on the show today. I was like, did I? I don't remember. have your diary. Just be super organized. Be as organized as you can. Write everything down, because, you know, when you're doing, I'm sure you guys know, when you're doing a show, like there's so many things that are coming at you at the same time. And you see, so you're trying to organize guests and things. So diary, absolutely.
Diary essential. Like calendar or day planner?
Yeah, he means the European version.
Oh, I thought it was like, dear diary, today was VV bad.
Like, I saw that whole thing go down. I saw Ian.
I could see him with his little pink fluffy pen writing in his like little lock diary.
It's got a little key with a heart.
I love Laurie Strode. Now, I know she's not for everyone, but for me.
So. Chris, how did you see my diary?
That's where my mind went. Well, Chris, I don't know how you're going to top that, but go ahead, Chris.
Christopher, sir, what is going to go in your backpack?
My backpack. Something that I do is keeping an open mind. And that means, well, one, that can challenge you very, very much. I mean, just in life in general. I mean, you think you have an open mind, wait till someone challenges you to an opinion you have. Right, because we all have opinions and we all think we're right about those opinions, but really being able to approach everybody as far as, well, that person thinks they're right, so maybe I'm wrong.
Nobody does that. Nobody but you does that.
No one thinks maybe I'm wrong. They know they're right. Cody, I don't know if Cody already went off the air or whatever, but Cody has very special hot sauce, and he sent me some, so I'm going to get a chance to try this.
I love that you have it at your desk. Is that where you keep all of your foodstuffs? Like Carol says, we haven't heard avocado in a while.
I just said avocado.
She missed it or something. Or maybe she means before now.
Friday and Thursday.
Like you brought it back. I don't know.
All right. So listen, we have to do one more thing.
His diary looks like the Necronomicon.
Nice cut.
Bound in human skin and inked in blood.
I have a terrible confession to make. I didn't explain to these two how the show ends. It's going to be a little jarring. So in horror movie style, my grandmother and I watched horror movies on the couch together. True story. 1980s. And my grandmother is responsible for every jump scare I ever had in the 80s. Because just as a monster or a bad guy or whoever did their horror movie thing, she would grab my forearm. And the sound that came out of my mouth at that moment was just like this.